You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are officially on the couch with Dr. Michelle. Welcome to my couch. I always encourage you to call in when I have terrific guests, and every Friday, as a matter of fact, here on the couch on LA Talk Radio. Hope you're having a great day. Make it more so and keep it here because we're going to have a great show today. Now, you can call me live if you'd like, folks, at 323-203-0815 to respond to anything I or my guest may say today. 323-203-0815. Or, of course, as always, if you're one of those shy people, you don't like your voice on the air, you would rather not, what you can do is you can email me instantly at docmichelle@aol.com. That's docmichelle@aol.com if you have a question. And please be patient because sometimes I have a lot of emails coming in and I just sort of try to take them in order. It's not about your particular subject. It's about the order, to be fair to all. Well, let me ask you something out there. Would you like to feel better? Would you like to have more energy? Would you like to heal or better manage a physical illness that you've been coping with or hanging on to? Well, if you're a longtime listener, you know I'm all about managing your daily thoughts and changing those what are called firmly held false beliefs to heal your mind and your body as well. Now, many of us get this concept, but we can't quite make that transition. We can't make the shift to actually working on our own thoughts and physical action to heal and actually have the lives we wish for. This is what I hear from a lot of you out there. It's like, I get it, but how can I make that transition? Well, my guest today, Dr. Henry Grayson, is going to help you understand just how to do that. By the way, Dr. Grayson is a licensed psychologist, founder of the National Institute for the Psychotherapies in New York City. He's authored many books, Mindful Loving, great book, The New Physics of Love as well. And, of course, we're talking about his latest book today, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. And this is also full of revolutionary methods to release all barriers to health, healing, and happiness. You've been holding patiently on the line. Great to have you here, Dr. Grayson.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be your guest.
Well, listen, one of the many things I enjoyed about reading your book is that you clarify, you help readers understand many of the major barriers that they have created that prevent them from having good health. And what I really also liked about your book is you have a lot of worksheets in it where readers can actually take time, think about, write down what they've been doing to cause a lot of these issues in their lives. So you're actually encouraging people to take the action, which is terrific. So it's an undertaking, man. This book is great. What a helpful book this is going to be to a lot of people.
That's the intent.
Well, there you go. Speaking about intent, what really is the other intention of your book, which is, of course, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind?
Well, I guess they're not just one intention, but I guess the main thing, of course, the bottom line piece is to help people find more of their true inner joy and happiness and health.
Mm.
That's the bottom line piece.
Yes.
And, of course, as we do that, that means I'm finding more of my true self and who I am that has a lot more power and a lot more love than I think I have.
Yes.
Because I think so often, so many of us think it's out there separate from us and removed from us. And I'd like for us to take back our own power for our health, for our healing, for our happiness, and to realize we have immense power to have effects there.
Mm. Beautifully said. You know, I love to read about how authors had the aha experience or the self-discovery that they went through to create the books that they write. So can you talk about some of the discovery you made that brought all of these healing perspectives together to create your book?
Well, there are actually two or three different ones that stand out to me at different times in my life that took me along that journey.
Right.
The one that sparked the whole thing to begin with was when I was in graduate school, actually.
Yeah.
I was in graduate school in Boston, Massachusetts, and I have to say, as a background on that, I'd had, from my mid-teens to then in my mid-20s, I had severe sore throats and colds, maybe 3 or 4 times every winter.
Yeah.
And often they would be quite debilitating. They would be often with serious laryngitis at the same time. And these have been like clockwork for about a decade there.
Yeah.
I had just had in graduate school, I'd asked a professor to let me do a directed study because there was nothing in the curriculum about mind-body stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know even why I got interested in it, but somehow I got interested in it, and I wanted to learn more. So I got a chance to do a directed study, that is to do a research project and all the research studies that have been done and write a paper about
it. Right.
Which he agreed for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I just finished that a few weeks before, and here I was in the middle of the wintertime, and it was about 3 days before I'm supposed to take my comprehensive exams.
Mm-hmm.
I have a German Shepherd puppy that's getting bigger and is getting out of the fence, and I have to do some work on it so he won't get out and get killed by a car, you know, nearby.
Yes.
And so I'm out there doing this repair, and it's not only just in Massachusetts, but it's a blustery, cold, wintry day, snowing like crazy, 20-mile-an-hour wind, 20-degree temperature, and I'm outside doing this work.
Right.
And so I start to get one of those sore throats.
Uh-oh.
I'm really dismayed at that thought. Here, right before I do comprehensive exams, I don't want a cold. I don't want that. I'm going to take this exam and be clear-headed.
Right.
And then I had the thought, what I've just been studying, that the mind played a role in several different mind-body illnesses that they thought at that time. They thought it played a role in ulcers, asthma, skin disorders, and maybe 2 or 3 other things.
Yeah.
They thought there was a mind-body connection. And now I know how could there be anything that's not, it's never could be separate anyway.
Right.
But it's amazing. It was such a discovery in those days that these were actually connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought of that, and I thought, well, this doesn't make sense to me that the mind and body are connected only around these handful of things that they say. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. How could you separate it out? Wouldn't this apply to maybe having a cold and sore throat too?
Right.
And with that, I began to ask myself some questions. You know, why might I need this? Why would I need it now? What would I get from it? What would it get me out of doing? Or what would it get for me? What emotion might be expressing that I've not dealt with more directly?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there some metaphor being expressed in it? And as I asked those questions, well, the first one that leaped out at me is what might get me out of doing. And I thought, maybe I want to get out of taking the comprehensive exams.
Mm-hmm.
So that one popped up first. Then I realized, no, that doesn't make sense because I'm, you know, very substantially prepared. I've given up every weekend the last 3 months to study. And so I just want to get it over with.
Yeah.
So I don't want to do it again. I don't want to give up every weekend the next 3 months. So I started and went further to be curious and asking those questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with the one, you know, what emotion might be expressed in this?
Right.
When I got to that one, I suddenly saw my neighbor looking out of her kitchen window, where she was doing dishes, I guess, overlooking my backyard. And I felt a big pang of guilt.
Interesting.
I felt, oops, I'm onto something here.
Right.
I'm onto something. And so I started reflecting further, and I thought, why am I guilty? I'm out here doing work for my dog, and she's seen me out in the yard many a time.
Right.
Then I realized maybe she's thinking this, that she's seeing me out here. I'm doing something in my yard, this horrible weather, for my dog, when I've not done something I said I would do for her aged father she takes care of.
Oh, okay.
Now, I knew that I'm going to take care of it because I always keep my word if I promise to do something, and I knew I was going to do it right after the comps.
Yeah.
And I was going to do it then. But I had projected onto her that she had this attitude about me. That here's Henry out here doing something in this horrible weather for his dog when he's not done anything for, not done this for my father.
Boy, Henry, that's your own stuff, right?
Total projection. Total projection.
Yes, yes.
And now as I look back on it, I realize that's what we all do all the time.
Yes.
We are all masters of projection.
Yes.
We all see through the eyes of the past. We are all projecting our meanings onto everything around us. But that point, that was the first time I'd actually realized that at all. That I realized I was projecting something onto her. She might be just content washing her dish there. Or thinking, how wonderful Henry's going to repair his fence so his dog won't get out.
Yes.
You know, who knows what she was thinking.
Exactly.
But I attributed this to her. And so I thought, well, is this the way I want to deal with this problem? Do I think that she thinks that I'm not going to do it for her father? I said, well, I'll just take care of that then. I can call her when I go in the house and tell her I've not forgotten her. I have comprehensive exams, and I plan to do it the day after I finish.
Yes. Yep.
And once I made a commitment to do that, that I knew I would keep, that symptom with about 15 or 20 minutes was totally gone. The sore throat was gone.
Wow.
First time in my life, it never developed into a horrible cold.
That's fascinating. That's called resolve.
Yeah. It's been many decades since, and I've never had one of those severe sore throats since, or colds. Because any time I get the first sign of a sore throat or a little sniffles, I'll ask myself those questions. Why might I need this?
Right.
What would it get for me? What would it get me out of doing? What emotion might it be expressing for me? What's the metaphor involved here that could be expressed?
Yes.
And I reflect with great seriousness on those questions, but I discovered that when I get the answer, that's never enough. That I have to have an alternative way of dealing with that in a healthier, more constructive way.
Yes.
That I'm firmly committed to carry out. That I know without a shadow of a doubt, I will keep my word about.
Right.
Then when I do that, I find the illness starts to go away.
That's a wonderful story. And I think with a lot of, you know, as they call them, mental issues, you know, depression, anxiety, things like that, it is so freeing and clearing to tell clients that this is what everyone does, is they're always projecting and assuming what other people are thinking, and that's making them sick because, you know, they're going within and finding negative things, guilt,
we're punishing ourselves all the time unnecessarily.
Yes. How freeing is that? And you took resolve to take action, which you did, and also by calling her, reaching out to her. What was her response? Did she say, well, I was waiting for you to do that, or she probably had no idea or wasn't thinking that, right?
She wasn't even thinking anything at all about it. You know, she was, oh, wonderful, that's great, I'll see you then.
Yep. Isn't that amazing? Confirmation, huh?
It was a confirmation I was projecting.
Yep.
And then, of course, the other thing, when I was in graduate school, it helped start this direction. I had to... wonderful opportunity of having Viktor Frankl as a visiting professor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he's a Viennese psychiatrist who wrote many things about mind-body connection, but and meaning in life and things like that. But he described his experience in the Nazi concentration camp.
Yes, of course.
And the thing that stood out to me most about it, he says, is what people think in their minds that made the difference for life and death in so many people he observed in the camp.
Isn't that fascinating?
And then he would always conclude, and I remember him saying this repeatedly, in a place where all human freedoms were stripped away, like in the concentration camp, there's one freedom those Nazi guards could not take away from us, is freedom to think what we think in our minds, that we are totally in control of that. And that's the one freedom we always have.
You are so right. You know, that Frankl book is a must read, I think, for everybody, Henry. It really opens our eyes to how we survive in the world, how our thoughts profoundly affect our survival. You know,
in fact, he influenced me more probably from that one half a semester he was there than any other course in all of my graduate school education.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
By the way, folks, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and my guest today is Dr. Henry Grayson. He's author of the latest book, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. And we're talking about revolutionary methods to release all barriers to health and healing and the happiness you deserve. Yes, you all deserve it. If you'd like to call, you can do so at 323-203-0815. If you have a question for Dr. Grayson, 323-203-0815. Or, of course, if you're timid, don't want to put your voice on the air, you can email me directly here at doc, Michelle, docmichelle at AOL.com, and I take all of the questions in order as they come, so do not be frustrated if I don't get to your question today. Maybe somebody else will ask your question, and you'll be helped. How's that? All right. You know, many of my listeners, Henry, are familiar with what the bleep do we know, the concepts behind that film, mm-hmm. and The Secret, mm-hmm. and the principles of the law of attraction. I talk a lot about this mm-hmm. because I'm a firm believer in physics. I'm a firm believer in what we don't see really does exist. You know, so
the greatest power is.
It is so powerful, mm-hmm. and our minds are so incredibly powerful, and we have to work that and believe that. You say, though, that in these concepts, they suggest the kind of thoughts we should think, right, of course, and images that would be good to hold in our minds. But you also say that all of these teachings are missing a most crucial piece of the puzzle. And I think this is where a lot of people get caught. What is this piece?
Well, often we know all these things that would be good to do or that we think we should do. That would bring us happier, make us healthier, keep us healthy, help us heal.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, most of us don't really do them all the time.
Right.
Most of us don't do it. And what the thing is they don't deal with in these works there is that why don't we do that? What are the blocks to our doing the things that we know to do that would help keep us healthy and happy and help us heal?
Yeah.
And if we have these blocks, I think of them as blocks to healing or barriers to healing, or I think of them as anchors that are holding us back. But most of them are not conscious to us. That's the problem.
Right, right.
They're not conscious. And we think that well, research shows, like, what is it, 5% of our behaviors maybe are conscious and 95% are not conscious?
Right. That's
and
right.
We try to all think of ourselves. We think of ourselves as we're being so conscious.
Right.
When we're not.
Right.
We're really deluding ourselves when we think we are. Mm-hmm. Because we're all replaying the past learnings.
Mm-hmm.
We're like I was projecting onto my neighbor. Mm-hmm. We're all projecting through eyes of the past, too. I'm
sure.
Seeing somebody as rejecting, or I'm seeing somebody as accepting. I'm seeing somebody as loving, or somebody as a whatever.
That's right. Right.
And it's colored by my past experience.
Sure. Sure
and so I'm doing all that all the time. So what happens is that as a child, we can have traumas in starting in the uterus.
Oh, yeah.
We can have traumas in the first year of life.
Mm-hmm.
We can have developmental traumas where we're rejected, where we're criticized, where we're ignored, mm-hmm. where we're abandoned,
yeah.
whether we're put pressured all the time, whether we're controlled excessively all the time.
Yes.
All these things can go on and on. And then they are encoded and we promptly forget God, almost all of them. How many members do most of us have prior to school age? Maybe a handful,
right.
four or five?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a few people have a little more, but I think that's all I have.
Yes.
So we're writing an operating system for our lives in those first few years, and then we probably forget everything we used to write that operating system. We had no idea about how to write one,
mm-hmm.
and the people we lived with didn't know how to help us write one a lot of the time.
Sure.
And so we wonder why we feel and think and act the way we do.
Right.
And yet we are all acting from that place. So it's not that we are bad people. It's
right.
not as though I made myself sick, therefore I must be a horrible person.
Right.
It's that more is something that this information got encoded back there.
Absolutely.
And it's more like old information in your computer
mm-hmm.
and old programs that were put in years ago. You forgot them were there. Maybe you got the computer from somebody else and it had some old programs in it. And then there's
right.
too many in there and it's gumming the whole thing up.
Mm-hmm.
What we do there is we delete some of those old programs. We free up the energy in that computer to work better.
Right.
And if our brain is a prototype of the modern-day computer, then in essence, what we have is just encoded information inside.
Right.
And that encoded information is causing so many of our barriers and our blocks to healing.
Boy, is that true.
Out of those traumas I had, I'll draw all sorts of beliefs about it.
Right.
Maybe I can't heal, or I have to get the same illness my parents did,
yep.
or I'm no good, or I'm really a sickly person, I'm a weak person, or I'm not deserving of total happiness. I shouldn't have that because other people around me didn't have,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so on.
Right.
We can have multiple beliefs,
right.
and those beliefs will be the thing that can hold us right in our suffering,
that's
physical
for sure.
and emotional.
And don't you think, Henry, that what happens is when we have those core beliefs, the older we get, we project those beliefs out onto other people and situations, and that only reaffirms our belief system and, for lack of a better explanation, maybe grow more reaffirming neural net pathways that are saying, yes, you are not deserving. Yeah, you know,
that's right.
Strengthening the physiological pathways of our neurons as well,
exactly,
right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the more we do that, you know, we open up those pathways more. But what we'll do if we have, it's amazing, if we have an unclear trauma mm-hmm. or an unclear negative belief, we will literally, at some unconscious level, attract replays of it.
Right.
Which is the most amazing thing. You think, why in the world would we do that?
Mm-hmm.
If I was, you know, the common story everybody knows, if a girl was beaten by a father,
right.
she may get attracted to a guy who will beat her up.
Right.
And then she'll divorce him, and she'll be attracted to another one who'll do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now we say, how could that happen? She's not a bad person. She's not purposely trying to do this to herself.
Right.
But it's got encoded that somehow, if that trauma is not cleared, we send forth a magnetic force field to attract replays of it. That's the irony of that human condition.
Yes.
And then we'll draw a belief about ourselves. Well, it must be my fault if he beat me up. Or I'm a bad person. I'm not lovable. I'm not good enough or whatever. I must not be worthy or this wouldn't have happened to me. Then
right.
if I carry that belief, I'll attract confirmation of that belief from everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Come hell or high water, I'm going
right.
to get that. I'll attract the person who will confirm it or the situation will confirm it.
Right.
Or I'll act in such a way as to get them to confirm it.
Right.
And if that doesn't work, I'll do what I did with that woman. I'll project onto them what I need to see.
Yes, it's so true. And then they say, why do I deserve this? What is God punishing me? What, you know,
we blame it on God.
There you go.
Might rather well. Than seeing, and because we don't want to blame ourselves, well,
right.
many people do, unfortunately,
but
I don't recommend our ever blaming ourselves.
Right.
But it's just recognizing we need to get away in our field of psychology and psychotherapy. I think we need to get away from the whole idea of pathology.
Well, that's a fascinating concept. And why do you feel that?
I think that we need to not call it pathology.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just need to see it's part of the human condition.
Yes.
As a human beings, we have these programmings,
mm-hmm.
and we all respond to what's been programmed into it, and we just need to do whatever we take to change the programs if we want to change them.
That is true. Now, some of my patients would argue, of course, you know what I'm probably going to say. Well, my dad had type 1 diabetes, or my mother had a thyroid disorder, or actually my grandparents were both bipolar. Now, I didn't ask for this chemical imbalance. Was I responsible for this?
It's not that we are responsible for having created what we got in our genes, but we know that many genes are activated and many are not. There might be genes from our parents or grandparents. There might be genes from 20 generations or 100 generations ago, too.
Right.
And we know that the environment that we're in will activate some of them. Can I blame myself for that? No.
No.
Not blame myself. But
right.
the optimistic side is this.
Mm.
Now, we used to think that our genes, once they were activated, was locked in. Now we know there's a new field called epigenetics.
Right.
That is that what is above the genes.
Yes.
And what is above the genes is the environment, and the environment contains consciousness.
Mm.
And that's even more powerful than the physical environment.
Mm-hmm.
And we can activate and we can actually deactivate genes.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do that with systems or processes that we have where we give a heightened focus of conscious intent. We can actually deactivate that genetic information because all it is just an information like in your computer.
Right. Now, you've done several examples in the book of consciousness affecting even plants, consciousness affecting water, consciousness affecting different types of things that, you know, just because our focus on them created some kind of a result in energy and mm-hmm. affecting those things. Can you talk a little bit about some of those experiments that you did or have you necessarily didn't do but have also explained?
Uh-huh. Well, you could take any number of ones like that. I guess one that's easiest to describe without pictures is to think of the one that a patient of mine who was a student at a local university told me about that was being done by a psychology professor.
Hmm.
And what they did is they had picked some identical plants and put them on the same side of the building, rooms that had the same exposure to the same kind of sunshine, you know, and they watered them equally and fertilized them equally. But they asked the students, as a part of the experiment, to go into each of those rooms when they'd be in between classes and follow the instructions on the door. And one door was to go in the room and to curse at the plant.
Right.
The next door was another room, a plant in there, equal plant, mm-hmm. and they would go into that room and say very kind, loving things to that plant, tell mm-hmm. them how pretty it was or how healthy it was and how much they liked it and adored it and so on. Then they did the same thing about two kinds of music. You go into the third room, and one you play some little Mozart or other melodic music, and then the other one you had the choice of going in and playing the next room was of playing some acid rock music.
Right.
Very dissonant. And they blew their minds what happened. Hmm. The ones that had the positive thoughts said to them and had the pleasant music, melodic music, thrived. They grew, they blossomed, and they just grew naturally. The other two that had the negative words said to them, negative emotions,
right.
or had the negative music played, they began to wither, grow, and just actually faded away and eventually died.
Yes. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So
and
you think that was the thought?
Was so blown yeah. away by that. He said he could hardly believe
yes.
his mind, but he witnessed it firsthand.
Yes. And
now that's yes. effective. That's an example of how all those kinds of thoughts are mm-hmm. affecting every cell in our bodies mm-hmm. all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Not to mention others
and
outside
others.
Of us, because
mm-hmm.
we're all connected, basically.
Exactly.
Which
one
brings me
big unified field.
To yes, exactly. One unified field. So, Henry, what do you think that the, how the quantum physics perspective affects our health and our ability to heal? What does that have to do with it?
To me, that is the most optimistic worldview that I could imagine discovering.
Hmm.
That came to me because I spent some time with physicist David Bohm, who wrote Wholeness and Implicate Order.
Hmm.
And that was a big turnaround in my life. When I was still in my 30s, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he opened up this other world to me of seeing that everything is interconnected. There's nothing that really is separate.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of like what Einstein once said, it's mm-hmm. just an optical illusion that
yes.
we're separate.
Yes.
In other words, it's a hallucination we've made up, this
mm-hmm.
whole idea that we're separate.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other part that I get from quantum worldview, though, is that, there's really just energy and information here. Why
yes.
do I say that? It's because this matter all seems so real.
Mm-hmm.
But all this matter here, this desk I'm sitting in front of right now and this chair I'm sitting in, is all comprised of atoms, right?
Yes.
And then what the discoveries are, we used to think, when we were children in school, our teachers put two diagrams on the chalkboard of the,
sure.
the atom, and mm-hmm. we'd see the electron and neutron and the proton and
right.
it looked like planets revolving around the sun.
Yeah.
And we thought that they were pieces of matter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, physicists will take the atoms and they crush the atom.
Right.
And they find there's nothing there but a spark of energy.
Mm. Isn't that fascinating?
Now, what does that mean in terms of my body?
Yeah.
There's nothing there but sparks of energy and information.
Right.
Which is all the unified field is.
Mm.
And so, in a sense, what we are all doing from the standpoint of quantum physics is making it all up anyway. As physicist John Wheeler said when he was at Princeton, said, could it be we bring the whole universe into existence mm. through our consciousness? And so if we're making it up, then let's go down and break it even further. You break down an atom to a quanta.
Yes.
And a quanta is 10,000 to 20, 30, 40,000 times smaller than the smallest atom.
My goodness.
And at that level, matter and energy are totally pretty much indistinguishable. And what makes it something appear as matter, they say, is just a slightly slowing down of the vibrational energy.
Yes.
It makes it appear as energy. And they say, what makes the difference? Why does it slow down and appear to be matter or remain as just energy?
Yes.
And it's consciousness.
Yes.
It's consciousness that does that. That affects that vibrational level. Now, if that's what happens down at the core of the cells in our bodies, then that tells me, I can have great optimism that I have great power to affect whatever happens in my body.
Right.
Because my body is made up of atoms. My body is made up of those cells.
Yes.
We have plenty of evidence that shows that consciousness affects all these.
Mm-hmm.
Even affects cells in a petri dish more than the physical environment.
My goodness, yes.
And so if we can see all that, we see we have immense power. We're not victims like we think. We're often taught in mainstream medicine you're just victims of this or that or the other.
Right.
And that we can fix it with a pill or something. No, that only takes away the symptom anyway.
Right.
But what the cause of it is something we can get to that has to do with consciousness. And what I mean in this instance, often unconsciousness.
Yes.
That which we're not conscious of, but which is going on in our minds, creating effects in our bodies through our instant messaging system.
Yes.
Dr. Candace Peart discovered that when she was at National Institute of Health, the neuropeptides are the instant chemical messengers. Mm-hmm. So the minute we think a thought, there's an instant messaging system going to all the cells in my body. Mm-hmm. So if I'm thinking thoughts of guilt, where is it going to go? It goes to my body. What does guilt do but demand punishment?
Right.
What better way to punish myself but to create a symptom, right?
That's right. That's right.
So guilt is a major factor. Exactly. Or fear. What if I'm thinking fear thoughts? Not only am I going to pour out stress hormones, but I'm going to constrict. If I'm pouring out up disturbed from my limbic system, I'm going to be in fear, and that takes away the blood flow from my stomach because it goes to my arms and legs for fight or flight.
Yes.
But what happens if I take the blood flow away from my stomach? I don't get the nutrients. Mm-hmm. My immune system gets weak.
Right.
And so it's not that I'm setting out to make myself sick. Is that if I don't deal with what we call stress, if I don't deal with my fears, if I don't deal with my past traumas, if I don't deal with my negative thoughts, each one is going to have cumulatively some kind of effect in my body.
That is profound. You know, and there are also neuropeptides. Our whole body is filled with them. And of course, our organs, that's why our organs are so affected in many ways. Our hearts. You know, they say that, yes, emotion does exist in the heart. It really does.
Yes, it does. In fact, even a lot of intelligence is in the heart.
Yes.
And you being in California, even more, you're probably familiar with that wonderful research at the HeartMath Institute up in the northern part of the state.
Yes.
Yeah, and how they say that they can measure the heart energy going up to 18 feet away, whereas the brain energy, they can measure it only a couple of inches away from the scalp.
Fascinating, huh?
And say that it reacts ahead, several seconds ahead of the brain in response to a fear-provoking stimulus.
Right. What I love also, Henry, is that you've legitimized a lot of the mind-body connection through physics, and you explain a lot of these things in your book, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. So a lot of people who listen to me, and many of them sometimes email me, communicate with me, and they poo-poo the so-called airy-fairy positive mindfulness that they have not been able to create within themselves and, you know, that kind of thing. Look at what's going on in research, folks. Really, check out Henry's book, by the way, Dr. Grayson's book, because this will explain a lot of it to you. So because of your mind-body research, you have created, let's talk about the link to healing here. This is just the first part. You created six questions that you suggest readers ask themselves when they start feeling or have gotten an illness. What are they? And why does asking these help folks identify barriers to their healing?
Well, it's like, because I came up with most of these first when I had that first experience around my cold.
Yes.
You know, why might I need this symptom?
Mm-hmm.
And why might I need it now?
Yeah.
And as I go through all these questions, it's important that I ask them with genuine, sincere curiosity.
Yeah.
Not just some mechanical thing, and then quickly conclude, oh, no, none of those make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But to really, with genuine curiosity, I want to know what's behind this, what message is there that's been not so conscious to me that I want to bring into my consciousness so I can deal with it. And as I deal with it, I can change everything that's happening in my body.
Right.
So if I can find an answer to why might I need it, or what would it get for me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like one person I think of, a common thing, by the way, in something like MS or some other degenerative illness.
Right.
Often I find in the background, the person, it's just not to blame them at all, but it's what they did the best they could to survive. And they found that the only time they got loving attention, often in their family, from a parent, was when they were sick.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they were criticized and pressured and ignored and abandoned and judged and everything else. But once they would get sick, they'd get some loving care.
Sure.
So naturally, they move toward what works.
Sure. It's called survival.
Why wouldn't they? I mean, we all want to get more love and attention as little kids.
Of course.
We even like it as adults, don't we?
Yeah.
And so why blame ourselves? But we come to see that that's what happened. We need to clear the traumas of not having gotten love and attention, the traumas of having been judged and criticized, the traumas of having been ignored. I need to clear the beliefs about myself that I concluded from that I must not be lovable, or I'm no good, or I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I need to clear all those things. Then I need to change my thoughts that would support those things.
Right.
And as I do all those things, and that moves me toward opening up a different set of neural pathways in my life.
Mm.
Then I have a different flow of information to all the cells in my body.
Right.
And as I do that, those cells begin to repair themselves.
Yes.
And the information changes as to what they need to be as they continue to replace themselves.
Yes. And I think a word, or two words actually, you used, which are really important here, is when they are trying to answer the questions, the six important questions that they need to answer about themselves in your book, which we won't go into because they really need to embrace it themselves, is have genuine curiosity. Genuine,
And I would say, and ongoing.
Ongoing.
Once it took me 2 or 3 years to get an answer to one thing.
That's so true.
And I continued that curiosity. Mm. And then once I got to it, then I was able to release myself from that particular issue.
Boy, is that true.
So I'm saying that not to condemn ourselves because we don't get it instantly,
mm-hmm.
but to keep opening our minds to it and keep opening our minds. Yes, sometimes I can get it very quickly, like I did in the backyard that day in that blizzard in Massachusetts.
Right.
But on the other hand, sometimes it might take me a few days. Maybe I might need to meditate on that several times.
Yes.
That may be enough. It may not be.
Yep.
Other times I might need to keep exploring it for a few days or a few weeks.
Yes.
But
sure.
To do it, that I'm going to continue to explore it until I find the answer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give up on it quickly.
Yes.
That's ego of mine that wants me to return to powerlessness and victimization.
Boy, is that true, Henry. By the way, in case you just tuned in, you are on the couch here with Dr. Michelle and my guest today, Dr. Henry Grayson. He's the author of his latest book. It's called Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. And we are talking about some of the revolutionary methods to release all barriers to health, healing, and happiness. This also has to do with scientific, empirically tested information that you need to do to work out certain things within you in order to heal. And it's if you are truly tired of feeling ill or hanging on to anything, right, Dr. Grayson, depression, anxiety, a physical disability that you say, I didn't ask for this, I want to get through this. This book is amazing, and it's what an undertaking. you put everything into this, from the quantum physics information, also to self-help, cognitive behavioral techniques, positive psychotherapy, and of course, you know, all of the basic psychodynamic information too, to explore what's going on deep within. What are some of the messages that you are still projecting onto other people that are negative about yourself? So it's a good thing.
Yeah.
If you want to call in.
I think I might just add that in the book, I've put extensive checklists about possible traumas, another checklist about possible negative beliefs that people can go through and just place checks by them, the ones that they think might be relevant to their lives or being manifested in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And just going through that kind of helps bring things into conscious awareness sometimes.
Yes, exactly.
And not that they're the whole list. There can be plenty of other people that have, but this can prime the pump of their thinking.
Mm.
And also put in there a questionnaire, a self-awareness questionnaire. And I find that people report as they go through that, they begin to see attitudes they have about health or healing, or sickness, and how they heal or don't heal, or what they can do or can't do, that they've developed through the years. And those are brought to the surface as they use that questionnaire.
Mm.
So these are some other ways people can get to it.
That is so true. Dr. Grayson, we just had an email here on DocMichelle@AOL.com from a listener, and shall we tackle this question here? This is a good one. All right, this is from Jennifer. It says, I have an autoimmune disorder. How will your book help me cope with this pain and getting through my life with this horrible disease? Hmm.
Well, my first thing would be not that I want to cope with a disease and get through my life with it, but to see that I have the possibility that maybe I can take myself out of it.
Hmm.
Now, there may be some times when I'm not successful. Like I said, once it took me 3 years to get to something. But I have to share that a very dramatic one that I did myself. About 25 years ago, I was told that I would not walk again without back surgery because I had such a severely degenerated disc that I could not move a centimeter in the bed without being feeling like I was jabbed with an ice pick and then shocked with electrodes.
My goodness.
And they told me that I would not probably walk again without back surgery. Well, I asked myself those questions again. And I went through there and I found several things I needed to deal with. There were some issues with people that I needed to deal with, some lifestyle changes I needed to make. And I won't go into all the details with that right here now.
Right.
But I went into that very thoroughly and I made a firm commitment as how I was going to deal with each one of those differently.
Mm-hmm.
Then, as a result, my back started to get better, and 2 months later, I was skiing in Colorado.
My goodness.
And then on top of that, about 7 or 8 years ago, I went in for a routine physical exam for an insurance policy, and the doctor examined me, my regular physician, who had x-rays from back in the past, and he said, "You got to take a. We need to give you a chest x-ray this time. We haven't done one in, you know,
right.
a long time."
Yeah.
So I don't want the radiation. I know my lungs are good. He said, "No," he kept insisting, talking me into it.
Right.
Finally, he came back and he says, "Henry, your lungs are fine." I said, I know. I told you. We joke
right.
with each other a little bit because we can joke around.
Right.
And then he says, "But Henry, you won't believe this. This is not supposed to happen." He got very excited. He says, "That disc of yours that was degenerated,
yes.
it's regenerated. That's not supposed to happen. That can't happen. It's a miracle."
Well,
and what that said to me
yes.
is that all things are possible.
Yes.
That everything is possible if we only allow ourselves that belief and then the curiosity and the willingness to open ourselves to that kind of power.
Mm.
Now, on the other hand, many of us may find embracing that power too frightening to do
yes,
it all at
exactly.
once.
Yes, exactly. That's a
we
common problem.
We may have to do it in increments.
Yes.
We have to take steps to do it and be patient with ourselves
mm-hmm.
because we can get frightened of having that much power.
Yes, yeah. It is scary sometimes.
So in response to the question, I would say, I would start with just asking myself questions. Why might I need this?
Mm-hmm.
And if an autoimmune system is there, is disease, that means my body is attacking itself.
Mm-hmm.
I might be curious to see, are there any thoughts I have or beliefs I have that are kind of attacking myself in any way?
Yes.
I want to identify those. Are there beliefs that are negative I'm thinking about myself, which is attacking myself?
Mm-hmm.
Or self-diminishing thoughts or self-deprecating thoughts? That's one place I would start. But I'd also go back and see what childhood painful experiences might have given rise to those I might need to clear.
Right.
And then I'd see, do I have any barriers against saying all sorts of positive things to myself?
Right.
Do I feel uncomfortable doing that? Like sometimes, for example, people, I will have them, a wonderful little first aid measure is what I call the thymus heart rub. And
yes.
if a person is having a negative emotion that's overwhelming them,
mm-hmm.
I might have them bring their hand up over the thymus gland, the upper part of the chest,
mm-hmm.
and with a flat hand, just soothingly massage the chest in a clockwise position looking off on the outside and
right.
repeat after me. I deeply love and accept myself even though I'm feeling so pissed at John right now.
Right.
Or I deeply love and accept myself even though I'm worried sick about my child right now. I still deeply love and accept myself.
Mm-hmm.
Often that first aid technique will help them loosen the emotion a bit and let it go.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm getting to here, some people will say, I can't say those words, I love myself.
Right. Scary.
And some people find it too scary even to say, I deeply love and accept myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we have to start in a more gradual way. I'll say, well, how about saying, well, I accept myself even if I can't say I love myself right now.
That's right.
And we'll start at that level.
Mm-hmm.
But these can all be ways that help bring us toward a state of health, including an autoimmune disease.
And that's so true.
Because that kind of self-love is so important. And
yes.
so with autoimmune, I would also look for any ways I'm not being kind and loving to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And look for ways I can begin to be more kind and loving.
Yes.
And then see if I feel any anchors holding me back.
Right.
And then if there are, then I need to do, I give procedures in the book, like you stimulate some acupressure points.
Mm-hmm.
While
mm-hmm.
statements of intentionality, and I find those incredibly powerful. Because if you find some barriers against doing these things, you can do one of these processes and clear the barrier right out. So
yes.
it's like clearing log jam out of the stream, so the stream mm-hmm. flows. Then you get those barriers out of the way, then you're freer to invite all the positive things in.
Yes. Well, I hope that answered your question, Jennifer. I really appreciate you emailing me here on the couch, and that was a brilliant answer. And if you would like to email us, we have a few minutes left here for some questions. DocMichelle@AOL.com. We're continually talking about just healing your mind, healing your body. And, you know, our minds do continue to work to keep us in pain a lot of times. We don't feel like we're deserving, or the stressors out there, we allow them to get to us. It's really hard getting into a regimen of writing down and exploring feelings. It's scary as well, you know.
Sometimes.
And some of your self-treatment suggestions in the book are also to try, along with loving yourself, I mean, try to forgive others. Try to forgive yourself for having all of these negative thoughts about yourself. I think those are biggies as well.
The ego mind likes to put ourselves down or judge ourselves.
Yeah.
Then it would like to beat us up for having judged ourselves.
Yeah.
And then it would like to beat us up for having beaten ourselves up for having judged ourselves. And it would go on and on, ad infinitum.
Right, right. And that ego mind is not the Freudian ego that you're talking about. You're talking about more of the Course in Miracles ego mind that sort of takes over, right?
Course in Miracles, or the Eastern idea of it, or whatever. It's that mind that thinks I'm separate.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, which is, of course, again, not true. And that's the beauty of your book, is with some of your scientific information and the quantum physics exploration, it really legitimizes a lot of the Eastern religion beliefs, saying that we are all one. And, you know, and what we think and what we say affects every cell in our body to either make us sick or make us well. So, and again, I encourage folks, you to check this book out. It's Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind, Revolutionary Methods to Release All Barriers to Health, Healing, and Happiness. And what's cool, too, Henry, is that you're a licensed psychologist. So you've been through all of the training of cognitive behavioral and psychodynamic and humanistic. And you've been through all of the modalities of treatment, but you're sort of just stepping out of the box and detailing these a little bit more, along with your experiments to help folks, which is terrific as well.
Well, I think that even though I was originally trained as a psychoanalyst and then in behavior therapy and gestalt therapy and bioenergetics, I went through them all because from the beginning, I always felt like there's some value in each of them.
Right.
And I
right.
got something of value from each, but I felt like none of them had the whole picture.
Right.
And so what I concluded was, as long as there's something, you know, that can help people be free from their suffering and their pain sooner rather than later, I want to know about it, as long as it's legal and it's ethical and has no harmful side effects.
There you go. Exactly. Well said. Henry, where can listeners find your book and get in touch with you?
Well, they can find the book certainly at Amazon.com. They can find it online at Barnes & Noble as well. They can get it online at my website, as well as, by the way, on the website, which is just my name, henrygrayson.com, spelled G-R-A-Y-S-O-N.
Really easy.
On my website, I have some videos that have me demonstrating these various tools that you can use to clear out your negative beliefs or clear out your traumas or install positive ones and so on.
Yes.
I have those demonstrated that you can download free of charge.
That's great.
And just use them on yourself until you get familiar with them.
That's
and then you can
terrific.
Do it from memory. But until then, it's good to see somebody doing it. And rather than just reading about it in a book, you have the descriptions and a lot of the uses of it in the book, but you combine that with the free downloads that you get on my website. Then you can have that to use until you get really comfortable doing it.
You bet. That's terrific. Well, listen, we've got a scoot, and Henry, it's been a pleasure interviewing you. And boy, this time has gone way fast.
It did go fast, didn't it?
Yes.
It was a joy being with you too, Dr. Michelle.
Thank you so much. I always hope to get in more information, but it's been my pleasure. So have a lovely day in Connecticut.
Thank you. And I wish you a wonderful one in California.
All right.
As well as all your viewers and listeners there.
All righty. Thanks so much, Henry, and take good care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. My guest again, Dr. Henry Grayson, licensed psychologist and also author of the best-selling book, Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind. It is revolutionary, but it is based on a lot of empirical tests, and you will feel better after reading the book, trust me. Or don't. Just pick it up yourself. All right, you've been on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and you can stay if you'd like. More great programming coming up here on LA Talk Radio. You can respond or email me at docmichelle@aol.com. Questions or comments. This show will be available for download tomorrow if you missed some great parts. And as I always say, do take care of yourself first. Then you'll be great for others. That's the way it works. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Flashing red.